This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, we're back on 830 WCCO, the noon to three show, normally hosted by Chad Hartman, the one and only, but today hosted by me, former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, filling in for one day and one day only for Chad. We're glad you're listening in with us about the discussion of important issues facing our state and our nation, and we want to invite your participation. Again, I have a view, but the point of this is to also hear from you about your views, and so we can have a variety of robust discussion on these topics. So to do that, you can call the City's One Plumbing Talk or Text line. It's 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. And before the break, we were talking to Ryan Clancy, who's involved with the No Labels organization, bipartisan group trying to find some improvement, ground for bipartisan improvement in the immigration issue and challenge our country faces. And we got a number of texts that came in from our listeners. Here's a couple. First one says, politicians have been kicking the can down the road for 32 years. How can immigration be turned to a positive? There is a desperate need for workers. Aging, shrinking population, economy will stall out with more workers, consumers, etc. So how can we turn this into a positive? In my view, one way we could do that is to say, whatever agreement we have on immigration, it needs to be legal. Because once you start signaling to people that illegal behavior is okay, it undermines what's known as the rule of law. We're a country that says we do not base ourselves on the edicts of men or women, dictators being in charge of us. We have rules that as a community, as a state, as a nation, we agree upon, and we expect them to be followed. And here, there's just open, flagrant violation of our laws. And so let's conform our laws to the behavior, or the behavior to the laws, or some combination of both. And I think the way to do that, from my view, Ryan offered some ideas. He wasn't coming at it from a Republican standpoint, but some of his ideas I think Republicans could embrace. But here's a couple more. Again, if you set aside folks who are refugees and they're coming here just for economic opportunity, the main thing they're seeking is either help from the government, our government, in terms of health care and housing and transit and all the benefits that, again, and some of those are supposedly not available to people who are here illegally or on an undocumented basis, but nobody really checks, I mean, frankly. And so a lot of that takes place. You could tighten up those restrictions or the enforcement of that as a way to deter not the demand side, excuse me, not the supply side, but the demand side of the equation. Also, there's a thing called E-Verify, which, the worst kept secret in sort of immigration is if people come for jobs, they really don't have to prove much to show or allege, at least, that they're here legally. They just fill out some paperwork, in many cases fraudulently. The employer who employs them doesn't have a particular obligation to check into it very deeply, whether the paperwork is accurately or fairly or fully filled out. And everybody just sort of, they put the paper in the file and everybody goes on their business. And if the ICE ever shows up at the doorstep of the employer, they say, we have the paperwork that we didn't know this person was illegal. So if we forced or required employers to use E-Verify, or at least say you have to use E-Verify, and if you don't, there's going to be some consequences if we find illegal behavior on your premise, I think you begin to change how employers would view the equation and would help discourage some of this behavior, and we need to force people, require, incentivize, whatever you want to do it, into the legal queue, the line, to get in and do it legally. That's something I think is very, very important. There were other texts that came in during the break as well. Another one said, fentanyl is not an illegal immigration issue. Fentanyl gets into the country via legal ports of entry and courier services such as FedEx. It does not get here on the backs of poor families. I think there's probably some dispute about all of that, but we'll let that statement stand. And I don't know enough to say it's fully accurate or fully inaccurate, but I want to make sure that that viewpoint was expressed as part of the show as well. Here's another one. How much of our problem is by design? In other words, how much of it is based on our laws regarding immigration? Well, I think there is, as Ryan mentioned, if you are on the left and you bring up any effort to restrict illegal immigration, you get called lots of names. And frankly, there's a sort of potentially a political calculation around how immigration benefits their party, the Democratic Party. On the Republican side, there's probably people, I don't know for sure, who say, we want to have our businesses have all these workers, and we can't really push immigration enforcement very far because you're going to have industries like agriculture or hospitality or others aren't going to have the workers. So there may be some unspoken or unsaid things that are encouraging the parties to go lax on these issues as well. There's some texts about the need to invest in judges and courts and facilities to process and, if need be, retain or detain people. That's certainly true. And then they're saying others, other than criminalizing immigration, what else could we do? enforcement, I would say. And maybe you don't need to criminalize it, but you do need the ability to say, if you're here on an unauthorized, undocumented, illegal basis, and you haven't gone through the proper channels to be vetted, you haven't budged the line, we have to have the ability to send you back and otherwise prohibit you from accessing what you came for, which is employment and government benefits in some cases. So there's a few additional thoughts on immigration. We are going to turn our attention now to something a little more local. That's just really about the state's budget. And Blois Olson, who's a WCCO radio commentator, said a little earlier on the top of the hour news feed that if the budget that the Democrats have agreed to at our state capitol goes through, the effect of that is that the state's budget will increase from last budget cycle to this one 30%, 30%, and that the state's budget will have doubled in the last 10 years. Much of that time, inflation was pretty darn low, by the way. So we have a state government that is on a spending spree that is unfamiliar to most family budgets, most business budgets, and the like. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But before we do, let's take a short break. When we come back, I'm going to just visit about what those numbers mean. They're a little more complicated than just the headlines, but the headlines by themselves are pretty startling. This is Governor Tim Pawlenty, former Governor Tim Pawlenty, on WCCO 830. We'll take a short break and be right back after this. We are back on Noon to 3, the Chad Hartman Show, although today guest hosted by former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty. That's me. We're glad you're listening in and hope you continue to do so as we go through hour number 2 and upcoming hour number 3 of the show. Before the break, we're talking a little bit about the state spending and how the state's budget from last budget cycle to this one is now slated to go up 30%. Now, in fairness, that includes some tax relief. A few billion dollars of that is in tax relief. So if you back that out, the spending on, say, government stuff is probably somewhat less, not a lot less than 30%. So the few billion is compared to the $17.9 billion they're spending. So you can see that while the final number, if you back out the tax relief, may not be 30%, it's certainly well high into the mid-high 20s. So in any event, I think that's going to give a lot of people in Minnesota sticker shock. There's explanations for why all the spending was needed and all the good it does, but it relates back to, well, by the way, Dave, just the sticker shock itself, does that number, do you think, is that going to startle people? Does it startle you in terms of just the headline number?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I saw the news as it came out yesterday and said, oh my goodness, that's wow. I mean, even for somebody that I've never been in government, I haven't followed government all that closely all my life. I know that's a giant number for the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, it sure is. And you know, if you think about how the economy performs generally, now the last couple years or last year has been an exception because inflation's taken off. We'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, for most of the last decade, inflation has been almost non-existent by historical standards, you know, a couple percent. And state spending and, frankly, government spending more broadly has far exceeded that. And, in fact, Blois Olson, WCCO analyst, mentioned earlier in the show that, on a recorded basis, that, you know, this is going to double the state's budget over the last 10 years. I mean, it's pretty amazing, not in a good way, in my view. Now, let's say, how did we get here? You know, where did they get all this money, and how did they have all this money? And there's a story behind that. They had stalemate in a couple of legislative sessions, so some money piled up. And another part of this is federal money. And all of us will recall what happened during the pandemic, the panic set off with the pandemic. But faster than people expected, you know, the economy and markets kind of recovered. But in the meantime, the Congress, United States Congress, who has no, by the way, balanced budget requirement, they can essentially affect the printing of money. Fed actually does it, but the Congress, you know, spends it or authorizes it. You know, they went crazy. And they spent trillions and trillions of dollars in Congress in terms of fiscal policy. And then the Fed spent trillions and trillions of dollars in monetary policy and, you know, hurled money out across the country in an effort to forestall an economic slowdown. Well, they're going to may get one anyhow, because what that did, of course, is trigger inflation. And so instead of having 2% inflation, we now have, call it 6%. And last year was much higher than that. For a while, it was up closer to 9%. And the Fed's own San Francisco Federal Reserve Bank said in a study that a good chunk of the inflation that we have now and have been experiencing and trying to get rid of is because of this federal government spending. I mean, they really, you know, unprecedented, really. So the Fed now is saying, and today they're going to have a meeting, an announcement about the next round of potential interest rate hikes. And our listeners may be wondering, well, why are they keep raising interest rates? Well, they raise interest rates because the economy, via measured by inflation, is too hot, too high on the inflation side, which means too many dollars chasing too few products and driving up the prices. And there was some supply chain issues too. And as that happens, it has other effects. And so you may have gotten $500 or $1,000 from the federal government, but if you used to have 2% inflation and now you got 9% inflation or 6 or 7 or 8% inflation, you know, call that a 5% difference between how it used to be and now. Let's say you make $100,000 a year and inflation's 5%. Your purchasing power went down five grand, for the same stuff, gasoline, groceries, you know, life's requirements. And so everybody celebrates, well, I got $500 from the government. I got $1,000 from the government. And a lot of people needed it, for sure. I'm not begrudging that. But I know a lot of people whose circumstances during COVID didn't change. They didn't lose their job. Their spouse didn't lose their job. Their economic circumstance stayed essentially the same. Brief downturn in the stock market, but even that came back not too long after the pandemic started. And now they're losing in purchasing power thousands of dollars a year because of these policies. And the point of all of that is, a part of the reason the state government has all this money is because the federal government gave them a big chunk of it, or they supplanted state spending with federal spending and it helped create the surplus. But they're spending it all. They're spending it all to the tune of a 30% increase budget cycle over budget cycle. It's not finalized yet, but I think with an all DFL or all Democrat legislature, they probably will finalize something close to it. And that's going to be the story, I think, for a lot of people politically as we get into the spring and summer. Also in the news this week, besides the Federal Reserve and interest rates, and I should just mention this quickly, on a geostrategic level, China and Russia have been growing closer and closer together. And that's sort of a proxy for countries who are not democracies. They claim to be communists or socialists, but they're really authoritarian regimes, and their followers, their enablers. And, you know, the United States has to face sort of a growing alliance between Russia and China in various ways. But one way we need to think about that is they are actively engaging in social media that is showing up within American news feeds, American social media feeds, to undermine the United States from within and try to fray us, try to separate us, try to cause friction within the country. And time doesn't allow me to go into all of it, but it's pretty clear that commentators, people who follow this and analyze it, have identified certain messages that China and Russia and their agents funnel into American social media, especially, and even in some of the main elements of mainstream media. But those messages include racism is getting worse, not better. Capitalism doesn't work at all. Elections are rigged or weaponized, and we can't trust our leaders or our institutions. Now, we all can take issue with some of those and say we agree in whole or part or disagree in whole or part or to a degree. But clearly, those themes, when you see them in your social media or in your media orbit, at least take a second to think about what's the source behind that? Who's paying for that? What are their motives? What are their alignments? And it may be their legitimate views, and there is no malfeasance by Russia or China, but in many cases there are. And so it's just a word of caution about China's strategy in part taking down the United States from within through these kinds of repeated messages. And their view is if you can give people enough messaging, enough volume with enough money behind it, eventually you can persuade many people of almost anything. And sadly, some of that seems to be coming true in the way that we treat each other, what we believe, even without evidence or facts. So check your sources and don't just assume everything we're seeing or reading, of course, is some sincere person on the other end talking about these issues that I just mentioned a minute ago. Dave, do you, well, I guess we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about social media. But we're also going to switch topics, and we're going to be joined by former Minnesota Congressperson Tim Penny. He represented the 1st Congressional District in Minnesota. He's involved with an organization called the Citizens for a Responsible Budget, and he's going to talk about these spending and budgeting issues, federal deficit and debt at the national level when we come back from break. WCCO 830. Hope you'll continue to listen in after this break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.